It's time for conversations about our food and how it's grown on Farm to Table Talk with your host, Roger Wasson.
Well, talking about food and farming makes me happy. And it makes me happy to introduce my next guest because he has the unique title of being CEO of the Happy Group. And we're specifically going to talk about Happy Egg Company. And my guest is Dan Ansperger. And Dan, welcome to Farm to Table Talk.
Well, hey, Roger. I really appreciate you having me on and excited to visit a little bit today.
Dan, you know, it's amazing to me that that there can be such a thing as a happy group. And it seems like a good thing. I mean, if you had asked me, I think, back when I was deciding what I wanted to be when I grew up, I think I might wanted to have grown up to be CEO of the Happy Group. Did you have that on your list?
Wow, I didn't, but I sure should have. You're right. I mean, who doesn't want to choose happy as they grow up? But tell you what, my journey's been a winding one, but there are far worse things I can imagine than being working with a team of folks that focus on happy every day.
So let's talk about that first. And so the Happy Group, what are the kinds of companies that you're involved with?
So primarily, we're in the egg business, but really the name comes from just the fact that just for all of us, every day we have choices in life that that we can make, good or bad, and the lens by which we've made choices is to always choose happy, to always try to pick happiness. And so when it comes to the egg business, which is at our core, we're an egg business, and we sell eggs in yellow cartons that you can find at your local grocery store. But for us, it's always happy and eggs, and so our core business is Happy Egg.
I'm tempted. I'm just trying to avoid saying anything like before the chicken came the egg or the egg came the chicken here because because I'm on the one hand, we've had eggs for a long time. We haven't had the fact that happy sells or that some of the things that people are looking for in eggs, they're wanting more story. There are people that understand that not all eggs are produced in a way that they're happy about themselves when they hear the stories. And so I assume someplace along the line, you or others in this company had to recognize a marketing opportunity and say, you know what, people care about this. These are standards that we can produce to and market. Is that how it started?
Well, so not exactly. I mean, I think what you're saying is true, is that there's an incredible marketing opportunity today. But really, the Happy Group has been in the U.S. and as a distinct business in the U.S. for 6 or 7 years. But we were founded, sort of our roots go back 70 years. So our founder is a gentleman named Michael Kent from England. And Michael's parents actually started the business with 50 chickens. And so what we've seen over the last 70 years is really a full circle in the egg business. So if you think about pictures of your parents, your grandparents, chickens were outside. They were roaming free. And it was just part of the landscape of rural agriculture. Not a bad thing, but that certainly changed over the years as production agriculture grew up and efficiency was king. And again, we're not against that by any stretch, but what we're saying is there is an opportunity to make a set of different choices and to really, again, full circle back to, you know, birds that roam free, choosing quality ingredients in the feed, you know, really, again, every lens we can choose a happiness. Now, the beautiful thing is it also is a great market, but it was driven by how do we, you know, create a product that we think is absolute best for the egg or for the chicken, absolute best for the farmer, and then ultimately best for the consumer.
Well, you know, if you go back to England, what'd you say? You started with like 50 chickens or something like that? Or
did you say? Yeah, Michael's parents started with 50 chickens. That's exactly right.
And has it been a straight line that he's had chickens all the time since then, or somebody in the family has all the time since then?
That's right. So In fact, even further, his parents, Margaret and Clifford, the chickens were a wedding present from their parents. And so who would think that a wedding present of 50 chickens, which is not anything that I registered for when I got married, but, you know, 50 chickens would turn into this. But their family has been in the business their whole life. Michael, I talk to him every day. He's, you know, in the U.S. quite a bit, a great friend, but he describes himself as a chicken man, and he has produced eggs from those 50 hens and eventually grew up and became the largest egg producer in all of England. So a very large business. He's since sold out of that business and focused kind of on doing it small and doing it right in the U.S., but he's had a lot of experience in what it takes to build an egg business.
Now, did he go down the road early on of just getting larger and larger scale? Because, you know, there's a lot of those places that had, I mean, literally like a million hens in the in their facilities or some incredible number like that. Did he get really, really large and then felt like he had to pull back and remember his roots and get, you know, get back on track to what he thought was a mainstream? Or did he resist big all along?
Yeah, hey, that's a great question, Roger. And I mean, that's actually exactly what, or similar to what happened. He did. He did look to scale. And in particular, Michael, through the 70s and early 80s, was very efficiency focused. And over the course of, I think in 1984 is when he first launched an organic egg. I think it was like 86 or so when he first launched a free range egg. And that came about really as this, you know, conviction, which was 20 or 30 years ahead of its time, which was we can do something a little different. Now, up until he sold the business in the past couple of years, that company still has some very large facilities. But there has been this personal conviction that, again, there's a different way to do this that that we think is very appealing for lots of people, for lots of consumers.
And then who made the decision to come to the United States and start the company here?
Yeah, so that was that decision was made by Michael's company, a company called Noble Foods in the UK that he used to be a part of. And they looked at the U.S. market about 10 years ago and roughly the development of birds that go outside, so outdoor access of the category, roughly the development was about 10 times larger in the UK than the US. And so they looked at the opportunity and some consumer need through some insights they'd done and said they thought there was an opportunity to bring what they'd refined and perfected over the UK to the US. And so they pioneered a business, which was hard bringing international business into the US is hard enough, but whenever actually all the production occurs on farms in the United States, it was a real uphill battle. But their conviction for, again, always choosing happy, and their conviction for this different way of production has ultimately been a real success story.
You know, some of the best definitions that I've heard about marketing is having what sells instead of just selling what you have. And and so at some point there, I guess they had to look at this market and say, okay, maybe, and I'm not saying that they didn't have a basic belief. Deep down, there were people that were, you know, committed to doing the right thing and wanting to, if they were going to be involved, they wanted to do it right. I'm sure those were intentions, but they had to look at the consumer research and say, there's enough people that care about this. We could be profitable if we produce and market to that audience. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I would say that's fair. I mean, there's definitely, I'd say there's two angles to that. And it's a really interesting question because we're in this unique situation where you can kind of live in this tension where absolutely the insight said there is a market here. There is a consumer who rightly cares about animal welfare, farmer welfare, and making a happy choice. And so no doubt there is an insight that drove the decision. I think the tension, though, the other side of it, which has come through in dozens of decisions over the years, is there's also a truth that we want to hold to, which is we're not going to compromise. You know, we're going to do everything we can to make the best choice. And for example, we give access to our birds, you know, not what the minimum standard is, which would work from a marketing perspective, so the minimum standard, but you know, what is truly, you know, science and 70 years experience say is best. And so we constantly live in these tensions sitting around our boardroom and walking the farms of how do we balance, you know, what consumers desire with making sure that we live true to the ideals of who we're trying to be as a business.
So when you had this business vision that you were going to become this company and offer these products, was that when you had to go out and search for farmers that would produce eggs for you in the way that you needed to have them so you could fill that market?
Yeah, that's right. And that was before my time when I was here. But I've spent a lot of time sitting around the table making sure that I understand that heritage and history, because it's so rich and so important in terms of what they learned and also what they learned that worked and what they learned that didn't. But absolutely, when they first came to the U.S. 7-8 years ago, it was selling the vision to farmers and existing producers in the U.S. of what this could look like in a different way, in different practices. And it was a hard sell. It was a hard sell just because change is hard. And the U.S. agriculture is a beautiful industry that has really created so much good over the past generations. But they loaded up and they talk about their roadshow across the U.S., casting vision for what could be a real change in the egg industry.
Where are the farms now?
Yeah, so all of our farms are in northern Arkansas and southern Missouri. And so we pick our farms based upon, one, finding a great farmer that buys into the long-term vision, and then also climate. And so we have tried to have an environment where if it's important for us, the birds go outdoors, that they actually want to go outdoors most of the year, which is never perfect, right? But Arkansas and Missouri have been a great starting base for our business.
Would you say that the farmers that are operating these farms and producing eggs for you, are they about the same age of average farmers in America, or do they tend to be younger?
Good question. They would tend to be a bit younger. Mm-hmm. So our model is about backing and supporting individual owner-operators of farms. And so we'll sign a very long-term contract to buy those eggs. But generally speaking, our farmer is in the 20s to 30s range. It's someone that has a passion and a vision for agricultural life, for, my dad's generation was animal husbandry, and they get excited about, what can be true on the farm, but need a little support, need a little kickstart. And it's been great to see these group of farmers that, again, the ones that have been with us the longest are 6 or 7 years, but they want to do this for decades, which is a really important part of our ecosystem, is building a sustainable business and model to create a future in agriculture.
Now, do many of them have grain that they're producing too?
It's a mixed bag. So we definitely have, about half our business is organic. And so a lot of our organic producers also produce organic grain. And we will work with every one of them to find, what's the right source for their grain. Obviously, local production is critically important in that.
Now, do they have to build the building, or do you help them put buildings up? Because you'd need some building, even if they're going outside, I suppose.
Absolutely, absolutely. So this is also an area where just over the past several decades, we've refined what we think is a fantastic layout for the farmer and a fantastic program overall. And so in general, we're going to provide that farmer with the specifications of what needs to be built. They're going to use a local team to get that built, and then we're going to make sure that they have access to the capital they need. And again, that building is completely and totally designed to create a great environment for those birds to produce great eggs.
Now, I would suppose some of them had been conventional producers before. Would that be a safe assumption?
A lot of the producers that we have were in the turkey business, actually, before. Or more likely, their parents were in the turkey business before. So many of them, in fact, I'd say that most of them, are new to the egg business.
Wow. Well, now let's talk about the eggs then. So
yep.
What makes them special?
Oh, well, I could talk for a long time about that, Roger.
Well, you got a couple minutes.
I got a couple minutes. Great. So, again, everything we do is through the lens of creating a happy choice. And so what's so just amazing and almost magical in terms of an egg is it is this unchanged food that for centuries has been used in diets around the world. And so you've got this perfect food with 7 grams of protein, all these added vitamins and minerals, but also what's so wonderful is the more you infuse the bird with healthy food, the more that passes through to the egg. So additional omega-3s, a more rich, vibrant yolk, a thicker shell, all these things come through when you put all these elements together to create, what we believe is an unmatched egg in terms of, we often say, look, cook, and taste.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you do cook it, is the yolk normal yellow or orange, or is, 'cause I've noticed differences in eggs.
Absolutely. The color of the yolk is, and this is a misconception, and there's so many fun things you learn about the egg business, and I'm a real egg nerd. I've become over the past few years and love the production side of it, but the color of the yolk is primarily driven by the diet of the bird. And mm-hmm. So, from our perspective, that rich, vibrant yolk, which is so characteristic of a happy egg, comes from a nutrient-rich diet that transfers through. And so generations ago, the American consumer used to be more familiar with a vibrant, rich yolk, but that over the course of decades changed just as a more simple, basic corn and wheat-based diet was introduced. So as you bring the vibrancy back to the diet, you get the vibrancy back in the yolk.
I assume they get sick. And it's been an issue of antibiotic use in other foods, in other meat animals. Are they used for chickens?
They're not. Nope, we do not. We do not treat our chickens with our antibiotics. So we are hormone free, pesticide free, and antibiotic free.
And then when you determine how much space that they're going to have, you mentioned earlier that you're above the minimum. What guidelines do you follow to, to say where's that minimum? Is there a certain organization or humane guidelines of some sort that you were keeping an eye on?
Yeah, so we generally speaking are going to exceed or stand beyond most of the guidelines that are set in the U.S. And that's just because each farm and each situation is a bit different in terms of how we build the farm. The minimum that we'll focus on is actually a standard we help co-write, which is the American Humane Standard. So American Humane Association, their standard for footage for a bird is about 22 square feet per bird. That doesn't make sense to most of us in terms of why that number is, but think of the birds have about 8 acres of space. So at a minimum, we're going to do that. Most of our farms are beyond that, but 8 acres is a pretty nice amount of space for a bird to roam on every day.
Is that per bird?
22 square feet per bird is a technical standard.
Right. Okay.
Which translates into about 8 acres total. Yeah. So when you go out to one of our farms, which is exactly, if you ever read a storybook about a farm and what farm life is like, I mean, our farms are exactly what you picture. I mean, beautiful rolling hills, grass, trees, and our birds are out on the farm pecking, and it is there's no real abundance of space. Interestingly, it's very important, not just space, which is a big deal, but also tree coverage. Birds want to feel safe just like the rest of us do, and so making sure we have trees, we put play kits out on the yard to give them places to roam and not worry about predators. And so their space is a big piece of it, but it's about the total package that makes the yard, so to speak, appealing for the birds.
Joe, I'm sure you have coyotes there and chicken hawks and all those other things that would love to get in there and get at those hens.
That's right. If that happens, then that is not the happiest choice we can make for those birds, right? So when we think about every lens we look through is happiness, it's how do we create not only a space where the birds are free to roam, but they also have freedom of safety and freedom of protection. And so that is a big piece of how we care for our birds.
I just went to my refrigerator and I pulled out a dozen eggs, and it looks like it's one of your competitors, and it's just got messages all over it talking about pasture raised and that sort of thing. But it's not yours. It's, again, I think it must be a competitor, just loaded with information. And inside there's also a brochure that tells a story as well. And I bought them, but I can't remember how much more, but they were quite a bit more than the eggs I would have gotten from the supermarket that are just the commodity cheapest eggs in the cooler. So I would guess there's quite a bit of competition if there's demand. I would think that there's other companies that are, obviously there's at least one that I've got here on my desk right now that are doing some of the same things. So again, I assume you guys are seeing that there's demand to fill, and probably a healthy sign that you get competitors.
That's right, Roger. And there are several other companies in this space that are doing a really nice job. So I certainly believe that we have combined all those elements in a way that creates a really simple value for the consumer, and they can trust that we are doing the work behind the scenes to create the very best egg that's great for the birds. But absolutely, I mean, this category, so think about this category, which we would consider outdoor access, has grown about four times the size in the last 4 years in the U.S. So every year, essentially, for the last few years, is almost doubling. This year will probably grow 40-45%, which you're right, attracts new entrants into the market. And by and large, there's some people doing some really great things out there. Certainly, our overall focus is to create great choices for the consumer. And for others that are out there doing, the right things, not just focused on how do I market this, but how do I really create a sustainable, viable supply chain, it's been great. And we project that the growth of outdoor access is only going to continue as consumers become aware that they do have choices in the egg aisle.
Is there some general understanding of the most likely consumers for this? Because I'm, my guess is that they tend to be fairly well-educated people that are otherwise maybe foodies or kind of active, the people that care about where their food's grown. They tend to maybe go to farmers markets and so forth. And those are just my hunches. I haven't actually done market research. But is there a general picture is it similar to that or different in your mind?
So this is my favorite question, my favorite topic. And I think it's my favorite because I've been so surprised by the consumer of our product. So for sure, it's what you just described. So we bucket consumers into different groups, and about 20 to 25% of the U.S. population is what we call concerned egg lovers. So these are people who self-identify as they love eggs. So just like I had growing up, my parents are fixing me eggs for breakfast most every morning. So you love eggs. And you're concerned about making, you know, better welfare choices. So 20-ish, 25% of the population are concerned egg lovers. For sure, that is and has initially been our target. But what we found and what's been so fascinating and wonderful to me is the desire to do this has stretched across all different consumer groups. And the consumers wouldn't use these words, but the term we put on it is it's an affordable better choice. So for $5, you can get 12 beautiful, great tasting eggs where you get a little bit of happiness every time you eat them. And so it's been so fascinating from certainly the person who's upper income and, you know, can afford the most expensive product in every category, absolutely, but also for the mom that is really concerned about creating those moments of happiness in her family's life. She can do it, and she feels great about it, and she's made a great choice for her family.
You know, I understand the importance of positioning on the happy side and the positive decisions they're making. I could see it a little bit differently, too, and that is kind of guilt-free in that people have heard enough stories about industrialized agriculture and they're not sure how much rumen a chicken needs, but it doesn't sound right when they keep, you know, used to hear stories that they fit in a space the size of a shoebox or something. And so I would imagine that there's a fair share of them that's concerned them, and you're offering them a choice. That they feel less worried about that. They may feel kind of content that they're making a step that they can sleep well at night.
I think that's right, and I mean, I love the production agriculture business, and so we never want to you know, disparage or think negatively about you know, people who are on large scale egg production, but the reality is. The minimum standards, which is the vast majority of eggs sold in the U.S. today, the bird, you know, never goes outside, always stays in the cage and has about, you know, 2/3 of a sheet of paper in space to move. And so it's a tough, you know, situation, a tough life. And so, hey, if you can afford $2 eggs and that's where you're at, like we want people to feed their family. But you're exactly right. I mean, if you want, you know, to make a guilt-free, better choice, we think that there's a great opportunity with all of these brands in the outdoor access space, but certainly I'm biased to Happy Egg.
You know, I remember that there was a story that the Washington Post did a couple of years ago where they were catching some large dairy, I think it was in Colorado, that they had drones flying over because part of their marketing campaign was to claim that the cattle were pasture raised, but they had these drones flying over to prove that they really didn't go outside very often. And and so there's some skepticism out there. What are you able to do to assure transparency? So if you've got those people that want to believe and, you know, are saying, show me. Well, you're from Missouri, so you're from a show me state.
Yeah. That's right. I am a farm boy from Missouri, and so I can appreciate that attitude, and it's valuable myself. And so it's interesting to say that. I mean, that exact, you know, we talk about the drone test all the time, and making sure that our farms are doing what we say they're going to do. So the thing that is true in so many areas of life, and I think is true here as well, is if this is just a compliance conversation and a tick-the-box conversation, we've missed the point. And so for us, we start way earlier on in terms of recruiting and contracting with farmers that have the same passion and same values that we do. And so when we say always choose happy, we want farmers that don't feel like they are going to be, you know, focused on compliance and how do they tick the box, but you know, what really is a better choice? And if we get that wrong, none of the rest works. And you know what? Sometimes we get that wrong. But overwhelmingly, our focus is creating a culture of people who share our passion. And if we do that well, and if every day we wake up and make sure that we continue to create a culture of people who share our passion, catch our vision, and we're living to the values, not just putting them on the wall, then we're going to be so much further ahead in this game. Of course, ultimately, it comes down to we want to make sure that we're doing unannounced audits and we're checking our farms. But if you ask one of our farmers, they're going to tell you those audits don't turn into gotcha checklists, but more, how do we get better? How do we continue to improve? How do we continue to create a viable business and a great situation for our birds?
You know, if you look at trends, and consumers have had all these interests that you're responding to, one of the things that I see building more and more are tying it back to climate change. And, you know, we've gone from a few years ago sort of like, oh, what's sustainability, to now sustainability is not even enough and people talking about regenerative agriculture. And I'm just amazed at how the young people I'm seeing and that are trying to figure out more and more how they position themselves with what they're doing in agriculture and consumers, too, of wanting to make choices that are environmentally sound. How do you address those questions when people are wanting to know, you know, where you fit in the environmental perspective?
Yeah, great question. So just vulnerably, we got a ways to go here. I mean, it is a critically important issue. One of the things that just from an industry perspective is incredibly sustainable is we're in an industry, nothing that we've done at Happy Egg, but we're in an industry where the birds lay an egg a day. And so we are regenerating, we're reproducing 7 grams of high quality protein every single day. And so there's a tremendous amount of efficiency and beauty just in the egg business. But that's not far enough. And as a company and as a culture, you know, we are certainly making choices around reducing waste, about reusing resources, about making sure that we don't have any water contamination issues. And so there are a whole host of things we're doing, but we have room to go. And so we are looking at and exploring areas around even how do we get more sustainable in the diets we feed our birds. We're certainly looking at how do we reduce food miles. And as we grow, getting smarter about getting production as close as we can to consumption. We are certainly looking at choices we can make around packaging. You know, a big part of the cost and the footprint of our eggs is the cartons that they come in to keep them protected. And so what I would say is this is an area that's incredibly important. There are many disciplined experiments that are going on, but if we want this planet to be around for a few generations, we're going to have to continue to find ways to innovate in that area.
And I suppose too that when those hens are going outside, there's some waste. They're contributing. They're helping fertilize the soil. And I suppose that there must be compost markets too. Are there for the litter?
Yeah, there is all of the litter, as much as we can of the litter, is captured and used on the cropland nearby.
So
that's a great point. I mean, there's no doubt the litter is used to drive productivity in the ecosystem and for efficiency. So there are some things we're doing, no doubt about it.
You know what? I know you've listened to some of my podcasts. I had one on that. I tell you what, I was becoming convinced that eggs are going to be so important to the long term. A big share of the undernourished population of the world is going to be in Africa. And that the one example somebody I was interviewing was saying that in many cases, they should just be consuming more eggs. The stunting that is as high as 25% in some areas of Africa for these children, and it affects them physically and mentally and every other way, and it's just horrible. And if they would simply have some more chickens and they could give their kids an egg a day, it would make a huge, huge difference. And these are people in the development side, so I don't know, maybe you're going to have to start producing in Africa too.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up. So we actually are building an egg farm right now in Haiti. So I went down to Haiti with a few folks on our team a couple of years ago and met with some local folks there and caught the vision for exactly what you're speaking of. And so our vision, the idea and the map, the roadmap that you're speaking of has been now successfully planted in many countries across Africa. There's a couple other farms in Haiti, but what's so beautiful about this business, so the one that we're putting in at our cost, you can look it up at the Nourish Project is what we call the Nourish Project, but is we're going to be able to create a sustainable, viable business for a farmer in Haiti. The first one's name is Gaetan. So Gaetan is in Haiti. He's got his land. We're building the farm. He'll have a sustainable business that will support his family. And every day, 600 of those eggs are going to feed 600 kids that are at the fringes of life. And so they will be able to convert those 600 kids to high-quality protein every day. And so there is such incredible things that could be done by transforming a child's diet through an egg a day. So that's happening. There's people that have paved the road before us, so we're able to follow that roadmap and hope that Gaetan is the first of many where we can have eggs really impact
Good for you. That's reason enough for me to buy your eggs, let alone how happy they make me feel. But just a company that is going beyond the minimum, not only for our marketing purposes and you know doing the other things as we've described in a positive way, but also taking out into steps like this and looking a little bit more broadly. That's impressive.
Well, I appreciate it. We've got a team of people who have that passion and live that every day, so hopefully it's the start of things to come.
Well, let me just wrap up, and one other thing that you and I have in common, we're both Midwestern farm boys, and we both left the farm. I've already told my story in another podcast about my leaving the farm. Why did you leave the farm, and why are you in a corner office right now being a CEO instead of back home in northern Missouri farming?
Well, first of all, I like to get back to northern Missouri and check out the farm. And from time to time, my brother-in-law is the primary person back on that farm. But so growing up in rural Missouri, it was the modernization of agriculture, and farms were consolidating and changing. And for me, my passion and my vision was, how do I impact that from the world of business? And so I went to the University of Missouri. Graduated there with a degree in agriculture economics and thought that I would go right into the agriculture business. Now, my career for 20 years actually verged away from that. So I spent all of my life at places like Procter & Gamble and Hallmark and working in the consumer world. So when I had the opportunity a few years ago to jump into the egg business, it was a perfect meld of my work around consumer and consumer brands and how to create things that really matter to people with my love for production agriculture. And so it's been wonderful. I'd spent years and years and years away from the agriculture business, but now there's nothing better than getting out on a farm, visiting with farmers, and seeing generational impact that the production agriculture business can make.
Well, that sounds tremendous, and it's something that you can be proud of, and I'm sure you must feel good too that you're in a position right now helping other farmers getting started and doing something that they can feel especially proud of in the kind of approach that you have with your program. And
I love it. Yep, absolutely. And our family farm, which is still in central Missouri, has been in our family for about 110 years, and that will remain in the family, and the impact that we can now make on dozens of other family farmers is certainly a big part of always choosing happy in what we do.
Well, I tell you what, your story's probably made other people happy, and I'm sure they're going to be able to find your eggs someplace and enjoy them and think about this conversation. So I want to thank Dan Ansberger for being on Farm to Table Talk. Thanks, Dan.
Thanks, Roger. Really appreciate it.
You've been listening to Farm to Table Talk with your host, Roger Wasson. If you like what you hear, go to farmtotabletalk.com and follow us on Facebook and Twitter, or go to iTunes to subscribe and give us a review and a rating. Thanks for listening to Farm to Table Talk with your host, Roger Wasson.